This is Indie Book Publishing. Indie Book Publishing is a show about new books and the authors who wrote them. It's an opportunity for prospective readers to hear directly from the writers, to hear what inspired them to write and publish, and to hear all the inside details about their books. And now, Indie Book Publishing.
Greetings for Indie Book Publishing, Balboa Press. This is J. Douglas Barker. The book is titled, 4 Minutes a Day, Rock and Roll Your Way to Happy. And joining me is the author of this wonderful book. Joining me from either Texas or Michigan, depending on where she is, I didn't ask, is Chimene Nugent. Welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks so much for having me, Jay.
My pleasure. You have a fascinating story. You were considered a very healthy, in-shape personality, high-profile personality in the Detroit area back in the, back 80s, 90s. Then something happened to your health that caught you off guard. Share a little of your personal story and why this book got written.
Well, what happened to us was I met my husband. I was in radio myself. I was a traffic reporter at a rock and roll radio station. And we met, fell in love, and got married, which pretty much happened in a very short period of time, in just a couple of months. And we moved into rural Michigan. And I started, after we built the house, I started feeling sick, like having headaches. And I had, at that time, been teaching group fitness classes. And I started feeling like a pain in my chest, like I couldn't breathe and couldn't get enough oxygen into my lungs. And eventually I discovered that our house that was once featured on MTV Cribs was contaminated with black mold between the walls. Wow. We never saw anything. And we ended up getting sicker and sicker and sicker until I found a few people who pointed me in the right direction. And I was able to help my family and cure my family with alternative remedies like vitamin IV, infrared sauna, and oxygen. And it took a lot longer that way, but we basically had to detoxify our bodies because both Ted and I had 4 different types of mold in our bloodstream.
Wow.
And our son Rocco had severe asthma. So I thought, you know, not only did we lose our home, all of the contents in it, which we demolished the home, that if anybody ever goes to YouTube and Googles MTV Cribs, Ted Nugent's house, that home, that 5,000 square foot home overlooking a beautiful, majestic lake no longer stands.
Wow.
We demolished it, lost all of the contents in it, lost my son's baby pictures, lost a lot of Ted's guitar memorabilia. But worse than that, worse than all of that, is we lost our health.
Mm.
And I thought, you know, how can I turn this story around? How do I make lemonade out of these lemons? And I thought, you know, well, maybe I should write a book. Maybe I should tell my story. Maybe it can help other people. And since I had been in the fitness industry for more than 30 years, teaching everything from step to spinning to slide to kickboxing and even Zumba, I thought, oh, well, I could just tell people how to get in shape and feel great. And, you know, since I'm older now, I could call it 50 is the new 30. Well, I turned 50 and I hadn't written a word. I turned 51, hadn't written anything still. I turned 52 and then I thought, you know, let's kick this into high gear. And one night before I went to bed, I said my prayers and I just asked for guidance. And I said, you know, I want to really help people. I want to share my story with others in hopes of helping so many other people, but also to talk about healthy living and all the things that I've learned in my 52 years to help people feel great. And I went to bed, woke up the next morning, and all I can say is I had this message about the title of the book, which was not 50 is the New 30. It was 4 minutes a day, rock and roll your way to happy. And then I got this message, this divine inspiration about all the little chapters in the book. And again, it wasn't just about getting in shape and feeling great, but also things like spirituality and the spirit of the wild and meditation and being healthy and happy from the inside out.
Mm.
And I thought, you know, I'm having this conversation with God, and I thought, oh, this is awesome. And then I got the message that I should write the book in 3 days.
I saw that.
So, So now I'm arguing with God. Who can do anything in 3 days? And I realized, Jay, that day was Good Friday. And something spectacular and miraculous happened in 3 days. And I thought, why not? Why not me? Why can't I write this book in 3 days? And you know what? I did. So
incredible.
4 minutes a day, Rock and Roll Your Way to Happy is a result of that. It's a result of my 50-some-odd years of being in the health and fitness industry, of struggling with life's triumphs and tragedies, and turning lemons into lemonade, and also making more money, which is something that all of us could be interested in. I mean, who doesn't want to have a little bit extra cash? And so in this book, I offered the reader an opportunity to use it as a journal. And we've all had those little things nagging in the back of our mind. Maybe I should be an artist. Maybe I should be a writer. Maybe I should be a rock star.
Mm-hmm.
But if you never pick up a guitar, you can't expect to ever get on stage and be a rock star, can you?
No, can't do it.
So I use it as an opportunity for the reader to get in touch with what it is that they really want to do in life. Like, one of the chapters is, if today was your last day, what would you miss out on? What do you wish you could have done with your life? And why not today? Why can't you jumpstart your life? Why can't you do the things you've always wanted to do in life? Why can't you create the life of your dreams? So that's really what my book is about, life, about being happy, being healthy, because you can't be happy unless you're healthy, and creating the life of your dreams.
And your unhealthiness, that unhealthy incident really occurred back in, what, 2000 approximately?
Yes. Yeah, about 2000.
About 2000.
So, yeah, it took me a little while to really get kicked in the butt and start writing this, but once I did, I was unstoppable.
And how long did it take to discover the source of your illness and to get that under control?
You know, that was a couple of years, because it's not like when you break your arm or your leg and you go to the doctor, there's a fracture in there. So it's not like that. It was little things like I had chronic fatigue. I had debilitating migraines. My son had severe asthma. And I did go to doctors. I went to dozens of doctors who said, you're just working too hard. You're overstressed. Well, do you know who my husband is? Yes. Of course I was stressed.
Absolutely.
But you make excuses for things in life, and I've realized now that you don't have to be unhealthy, that those things that show up as aches and pains and those things that really make you feel bad in life are really red flags that you should address.
And you had been eating so healthily in your lifestyle that you felt like maybe you needed to go to McDonald's and change your style of eating.
Yeah, well, no.
Not exactly.
One of the doctors that I visited, and I wrote this in the book, he actually said, hey, maybe I think you're too healthy. Maybe you should really try eating at McDonald's. And I thought, okay, this is not the doctor I need to go to. But, you know, you try everything you can in life. And if there are, again, there's always something that will inevitably bring us to our knees. And I think those are the times when we need to go, okay, God's sending me a message. I need to think about this. I need to dig down deep inside. Like you're gardening. You need to get at the root of the problem and pull out that weed.
You have 60 chapters in your book. It's only 134 pages. Describe for my listeners a little of the style of your writing and the content, how it comes together.
The style of my writing is like we're talking right now, Jay. I mean, that's how I wrote the book. I wanted it to be a conversation.
Right.
Some of the chapters are a little bit longer, and some are meant to be consumed in about 4 minutes, because I didn't want time to be an obstacle for anybody, because, you know, time is an obstacle. Everybody says, oh, I can't go to the gym. I don't have time. I can't start a new career. I don't have time. So I wanted to start with something that's obtainable. And somebody said, well, can you really get in shape in 4 minutes a day? Yes. Let me tell you how. If you've never worked out in your life, let's just say you never have. Let's say you start by walking for 4 minutes a day. Well, 4 minutes, that's nothing. Well, guess what? 4 minutes can turn into 10 or 20 or 30. And this is the impetus to start you on a healthier, happier path.
You have in your book also encouraged people with some very positive observations about change that is good. And then in living life, a life that you've never even imagined is possible. How do you get people on that first step? Besides evaluating where they are physically, there's a mental process to this as well.
Well, I think change comes from within, and we all have those moments in our life, like I said, that brings us to our knees. And sometimes it has to be when we're dark, we're in a deep place. And my son, Rocco, talks about the chapter titled Sadness, because I saw on Instagram a photo of him. He posted a photo of himself crying. And now what mother, what parent wouldn't get upset if they saw that?
Mm-hmm.
And so I immediately called him and I said, are you okay? Because he lives in Los Angeles. And he said, Mom, sadness is a natural emotion. We all see everybody being happy on social media, but you know what? It's okay to be sad. And so Rocco actually wrote that sadness chapter because I loved so much, and he was speaking from the heart and truthfully, because sadness is part of our natural emotion. We shouldn't uncover it. And I think that those are the opportunities for us to go, wow, what or who am I sad about? Because there are people in our lives, correct me if I'm wrong, who, when we're near them, we're not very happy campers. So it's an opportunity for us to look at the things that we want to change in our life and make them better. And I'm hoping that someone will look at this book and go, you know what? 4 minutes a day, that's obtainable. That's doable. I'm not down in a deep, dark chasm where I can't get out, but I can do 4 minutes a day. I can do that. So I'm hoping that people will look at this book as an opportunity to inspire and motivate them to change their life and help them live the life of their dreams.
At the end of many of your chapters, you have led the reader into an opportunity to share their feelings, maybe just with themselves or whoever else may read the book, where they can reflect on where they are personally and make some positive steps in the right direction.
Yeah, you know what? I wrote the book that I wanted to read. I've got probably every self-help book on the planet.
Uh-huh.
But there's never been one book that encompasses everything like this one does. There's, you know, healthy living cookbooks or cleaning out your closet and how to get organized and spiritual books and meditation books. But this is a book that encompasses all of those things. So I'm hoping that readers can not only share this with others, but they can really dig down deep inside and use this as a tool to write and journal. And I even have one or two chapters in there where there's a blank page, because you know what? Sometimes some of us work better when we just draw in color. And as when we were little kids, you draw a picture of your family, draw a picture of where you want to work. Who do you want to be with? You want to go on a trip? Where do you want to go? So it's a book that encompasses everything: reading, writing, arithmetic, and happiness, sadness, and every emotion within.
You've described your book as a book that would be suitable for anyone up to 80 years of age, maybe even older. And one chapter that kind of is curious, it would be curious for me to see the results of, is Dress Like a Rock Star. How would an 80-year-old dress like a rock star?
Okay, my grandmother is the perfect example of that. My grandmother was 97 years old when she passed away a couple of years ago. And I have a picture of her on, I put it on social media, when she was 95 years old. She walked on stage with my husband, rock and roll musician Ted Nugent. And you know what? I think what happens, and even in my book, I posted a picture of myself at 47 or 48 on stage dancing with my husband. Now, had I not gotten sick, I probably would have been one of those people where, oh no, I'm too old. I can't get up on stage in front of 60,000 people and dance on stage. And I think when you get to be a certain age, and also when you lose your health and you get it back, I think you look at life differently. And for me, it was like, well, I can't dance on stage when I'm 60, so I might as well do it now. And I think for my grandmother and for those people who are older, why not? If you can't live the life of your dreams when you're 88 or 98, mm-hmm. when can you? So put that, you know, boa on and fluff up your hair and put your best dress on and go out and dance.
Sounds like a plan to me. I think I'll go home and get my dancing shoes out of the closet. They've got a lot of dust on them, but I think I need to dust them off and get moving.
Just
for my listeners, a couple of the chapter headings just for your information. The Power of Friendship, Taking Care of Business, Travel, which you advocate greatly in your book, Charity, Go Green, Voice Your Opinion, Social Media, a lot of topics covered, including clean your closet. I think that probably is an important one. Morals and values, the importance of that. Good sleep. Other things that are in here that are inspirational and are covered in a couple of pages, so it's an easy read. Someone can pick this up and cover a chapter a day or recover it or go back through it at any time and find the benefits of what you've expressed. This is a book that should be easy reading, 134 pages. Charmaine, where do we get copies of your book?
You can get this book at BalboaPress.com. It's also available on Amazon.com. And I just really want to express that it is a quick read, and research shows that if you start and commit to changing your habits with 60 days, that's why the book is set up with 60 chapters. Research shows that that's how we can change bad behaviors. And how else can you start but with 4 minutes a day?
Fabulous. Advocate for healthy living, Charmaine Nugent. You've been a group fitness instructor for over 30 years, a motivational speaker, author, and also the spouse of Ted Nugent, rock star. That in itself is a full-time schedule, I'm thinking. I've seen you on morning talk shows and on the networks sharing stories and sharing your life. This is a book that will benefit the reader, so I encourage them to pick a copy of this up. Again, the title, 4 minutes a Day, Rock and Roll Your Way to Happy. Thank you so much for joining me today. Is there a follow-up book in the works?
Oh, yeah. I'm always writing, and I'm working on a screenplay right now. And, yes, I there's always something going on. And, in fact, I'm on social media. I'm on Facebook often. And I would encourage readers to interact with me. I'd love to hear their thoughts on the book. I'm on Instagram and Facebook and Twitter and almost every social media. I'm there, and I love to hear about people's stories. So, yes, bring it on.
Bring it on. Thank you for joining me today. Charmaine is spelled Shemane. And, of course, the last
correct
name, Nugent, Nugent. Charmaine, thank you for joining me today, and look forward to visiting with you and hearing of your success with this wonderful, wonderful book that you've created.
Thank you so much, Jay. I appreciate you taking the time and having me.
Honored to visit with you. For Indie Book Publishing, Balboa Press, this is J. Douglas Barker.
You're listening to Indie Book Publishing, and we'll be right back after these messages.
Have you heard? The pages of American Patchwork and Quilting magazine come to life on our new weekly online radio show, American Patchwork and Quilting. Join Pat Sloan, our blogging and quilt designer host, as she talks about the latest trends, ideas, and inspirations. Her guests include quilt pattern designers, authors, quilt shop owners, and our editors. All quilters, just like you. Call in with your questions. Get quilting tips from industry experts. Learn about free patterns. Hear behind-the-scenes stories from our magazines, American Patchwork and Quilting, Quilt Sampler, and Quilts and More. Get the scoop on free stuff and find out more about the best independent quilt shops in North America. To listen to a live show, tune in Monday at 4 p.m. Eastern. Just log on to allpeoplequilt.com/radio. To hear past shows, go to iTunes and search for American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. We hope you'll join us because we know that quilting changes everything.
Welcome back to Indie Book Publishing, helping authors publish, promote, and sell their books around the world. Now, back to your host, Steve Jorgensen.
Greetings for Indie Book Publishing, Archway Press. This is J. Douglas Barker. The book today is titled Recovery from Anger Addiction, How I Recovered from Rage by Resolving My Lifetime of Losses and Pain. And joining me from Arizona in the United States of America is author Verrill V. Fosnight. Thank you, sir, for joining me today.
Well, you're welcome. Glad to be here.
This is an extensive read. I would say extensive only from the standpoint that there are over 326 pages of your telling your story. There must have been a story behind the story. Why did this book get written?
Well, I wrote it to give back to the recovery community in gratitude for my own recovery from my own addictions. And nobody had ever, when I realized that anger was an addiction for me, I thought maybe it was for everyone, and I would try to add that to the literature of recovery books.
Your addiction also included, you mentioned anger as a primary source of an issue in your life, but it also spilled over into chemical addiction, did it not?
Well, my first recovery was from alcohol. In alcohol addiction in AA, and then I found out I was codependent, and I moved on to codependence in CODA. And I read and studied all the books I could and everything, and over 28 years, everything just got a lot better. I didn't drink, and I wasn't so addicted to my wife, and everything was just getting better, except I was still angry. And I couldn't understand, because I had assumed that shame with the problem.
Mm-hmm.
And the shame comes from childhood abuse, which caused the codependence, which caused me to drink.
Right.
And I just I couldn't understand why healing the shame, which I obviously had, didn't heal the anger.
Anger is a tough one. I have I have a few friends in my history, one in particular that was just so angry most of the time. I remember going on a short trip with that gentleman and his family, and he couldn't get his car hooked up to the RV in front of him and became so angry he slammed the door of the car and broke the windows in it. And I still to this day don't know what was the motivation for his anger, but he was a person with what would be termed a short fuse. Would that describe you?
Yeah, that describes me. A short fuse in certain situations. Generally impatient, but my situations were mainly in relationships and with my parents, especially with women, because some of them seemed like my mother was.
Right.
And I realized early on that shame, which was caused by the childhood abuse, was probably why I was angry. That's why I tried to cure the shame, and I thought that would cure the anger, but it didn't.
Did it affect your career choices at all?
No, I was able to manage it and not pop off when it would get me in trouble until the last time.
Until the last time. That's a very
well. I was arrested for spousal abuse. I grabbed my wife and held her and screamed in her face, and I was arrested a couple of days later, and probably properly so. I shouldn't have done that. And I went to jail for 32 hours, and was arraigned and sentenced to go to anger management classes.
And those anger management classes that you referred to, those are classes that are available to just about anyone that has an issue, correct?
Well, I think I had signed up for one, which was probably set up to handle court-mandated or sentenced people. This one was set up to serve the courts, but it was really totally worthless. The problem was, they teach you in anger management how to manage it. In other words, rational ways to hold your anger in and to not act it out so strongly.
Right.
I learned my anger in my childhood abuse before I was rational. My memories of what made me angry were body memories, cellular memories, subconscious. They weren't verbal. There were pictures and senses and sounds and smells and things like that. So the rational, all the therapy and all the anger management didn't do me any good. I needed to work on the deep emotions.
The deep emotions. You have, how long did it take you, Verrill, to write or recount your story in print with these 326 pages?
I worked on it about a year. I worked on it intensely for about 7 or 8, maybe 9 months. I mean, 7 days a week.
Intense.
8 to 12 hours a day.
What was that part of your, what I would call your recovery therapy, perhaps, from a personal standpoint?
Yeah, that was my program to for me. In my writing and at research, and one thing would lead to another, and one thing would lead to another, and I'd read another book, and I'd read another book, and I'd read another book, and it all came together till I got what I thought was a very coherent, logical, rational theory on how to get over my anger. My anger was not caused to shame, as I said. My anger was caused to pain. I went to after I was arrested, I went to a recovery center, and at the end of this 1 week workshop, he was doing my homework, and he was working one-on-one with everybody else watching, and he looked at me very quietly and with a somber voice, said, "A lifetime of losses and pain," and I lost it. I just cried like a baby.
Mm.
Nobody had ever called into attention that I had been in pain all my life.
Right.
So my theory that it's an addiction is that anger is an addiction because it makes you feel good, like drinking makes you feel good, because it kills the pain.
Right.
It's a way of dealing with the pain, maybe feeling powerful over old events that that reoccur from childhood. Now, not all anger, but a lot of anger is. A lot of people that are angry.
Your book is more than a biographical sketch, though. You have examined the perspective of anger from where you have developed and finally gotten it under control. You have a book here that, is it only a book that will appeal to people who have those types of addictions, or do you think it has a broader necessity?
No, I don't think so. I think it will appeal, and I hope it will help people that have anger that was caused by that relates back to things that sound like and feel like childhood stuff. And they don't know it. And I didn't know it. I mean, I realized I was angry at women generally, if they sounded like my mother. I made that connection.
Yes.
And, well, my mother abused me, and so that was it. But there was a lot more to it. The abuse caused me shame, caused me losses in my childhood. I lost myself. I lost my body wasn't any good. It was beat. My emotions weren't any good. I was left to cry. My dad didn't do anything. I was neglected. So I was abandoned. I had all those emotions. There were losses, so serious losses to my inner self. That caused pain, and I was sad and painful about it. The way I handled it was to get angry because it made me feel powerful. The other part that I realized that it was an addiction, my anger, was that it was obviously pathological. It had a progression and signs and symptoms, and it never got better. It only got worse, and it obviously had life damaging consequences. That's John Bradshaw's definition, working definition of an addiction. Then when I realized I was in denial over it, it had all the hallmarks of an addiction. When I did that and started to grieve the pain, I got over the pain and the anger went away.
The grieving process, is that the beginning of your recovery, really, of your real recovery?
Yeah.
Yes. Okay.
So in answer to your question, I kind of got off track there. It's I only had one case study, me. I'm not a therapist. I'm a physicist.
Correct.
So my case study was me. But I backed up everything that I thought about me with dozens and dozens and dozens of books. The longest chapter is chapter 15, which I call Recovery Junkie, and it's the bibliography chapter in the middle of the book about the 20, 30, 40 books that I refer to. There's 76 footnotes in the book.
Amazing.
There's a glossary of terms, and it's a very serious book that's well backed up by the theory, the conventional theory. John Bradshaw, Pia Melody, Ann Wojcik, I can never pronounce her name, T.N. Dayton, many, many, many gurus of the recovery theory of all different kinds of addictions.
Again, it's a book of more than just a biographical sketch of your life. I mean, this is something that will pass along to others.
Well, I hope it'll become part of the literature of anger, and I don't have any need to sell it to make money, but I hope it'll sell 1,000 books this year to help 500 or 1,000 people, and next year 1,000, and next year 1,000. Next year 1,000. My books that I love for my recovery that helped me so much, I bought them 20 and 30 years ago. I can walk into any bookstore today and buy them. They're still for sale.
Still
I hope
solid.
That this book will become one, because there are a lot of angry people, as you mentioned.
Absolutely.
And now, you mentioned one thing about your friend. I have no idea what caused his anger, what triggered him with his car. But there are certain things. People can get angry with PTSD or something, you know, from things that they learn in adulthood that they can get shot at or see, you know, all the news, watch the news. Anything in the news can make you angry.
That's true.
War trauma and things like that.
Yes.
Those things happen in adulthood. They're not necessarily stored as non-rational information in the subconscious. On the other hand, some PTSD may be so irrational if you're in war. Maybe that is stored. Maybe that's where PTSD comes from. I'm saying maybe because I don't know, but maybe a deep emotional thing will work with PTSD. And the things I have read about PTSD, it is deep emotional work that they find is working, getting down to the inner self.
Right. You have mentioned in your earlier conversation that tears were an integral part of your recovery, at least the beginning steps. You also have a chapter that there is other ways to grieve. What have you discovered in that grieving process that might be unique to people?
I put that in because my way of grieving, I looked at pictures of my wedding album when we got the divorce after I went to jail, of course, and cried over the loss. Each time I cried, that was grieving. But some people can't cry. And for whatever reason, they can't cry. But there are numerous ways in my recovery books I found, when I look for them, to grieve. There are excellent books that I refer to in there. There's writing with your left hand to get down to your childhood memories with your off hand. There's writing letters to yourself with your left hand. There's talking to an empty chair that represents your father that beat you or your mother that abused you. There's all kinds of techniques, and I refer to them. I think it'd be a good source for people. Other ways to grieve. There's many, 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 many ways to do it.
Those are great suggestions. I can think of the one that I use, and that's banana fudge sundaes. I mean, that's probably not a good choice, but you know, those are ways I deal with stress sometimes.
Hey, whatever works, huh?
Probably so. You have a book that is very complete, 326 pages. It took a while for you to complete this, of course. Is there an underlying message besides the grieving process that you feel might come through to the reader?
Well, yeah. A real important message is anger is not necessarily bad behavior by a bad person. Don't tell yourself you're a bad person because you're angry. Maybe you're a sick person and just need to get well. And if you consider yourself an addict, most people would go, "Ooh, I don't want to be an addict."
Right.
But would you rather be a bad person? Because that's maybe what you've been telling yourself. So would you rather be a sick person trying to get well or a bad person trying to act better? I could never act better. For 50 years, I couldn't act better. But when I got rid of the pain, the anger went away.
That's great advice. In addition to the mechanical side of putting this book together, were there other challenges that you hadn't anticipated but had to overcome?
Well, I thought the crying would do it. I realized I had grieved, but I didn't realize it was an addiction. When I realized that my anger made me feel good, made me feel powerful, Then I realized I was in denial, and that's why it took so long for me to get over it. Yeah, so for someone struggling with anger, the denial, because it feels so good. Like an alcoholic is in denial because alcohol is his best friend. That's what makes him feel good. That's what gets him through the day. Well, that anger got me through the day a lot of times. So, but of course, I knew it was a problem, but it wasn't big enough to work on it. I jived myself.
Right. Oh, Varel, this is a book that has taken a lifetime to create. And I'm wondering, is there another one on the horizon? What is your goal for this book?
Well, I'm actually working on an anger addiction program to try to provide it to the local court system as an experimental program, which I would fund with a therapist, and to replace, on an experimental basis, anger management classes. To see if we couldn't reach some people who have that childhood stuff.
Boy.
And maybe we could help them. And if that helps in a circle classroom kind of group therapy kind of session, that's what the advantage of anger management is. It doesn't work very well, but at least it's cheap because, you know, for $10 or $20 times 10 people or 15 people, that can you can afford a decent therapist. But as opposed to individual $125 an hour sessions. So if I can pull that off, and my mantra is it's only grandiose if you don't pull it off. Yes. If I can pull off a grandiose idea and have an experimental program with 5 to 10 people sitting in a circle meeting once a week rather than going to anger management that are sent there by the court, then we'll really have something, and then I will really have made a contribution.
I think that's a great idea. My best wishes to you in that endeavor.
I think it'll work.
I think it will, too. I love the fact that you have been forthcoming and also transparent in what you've shared in your book. Again, the title is Recovery from Anger Addiction, subtitled How I Recovered from Rage by Resolving My Lifetime of Losses and Pain. Varel, V. Fosnight has been my guest. Varel, where do we get copies of your book?
Well, it's available as all e-books on Kindle and all the other popular e-book formats. It's as a soft cover or a hard cover on Amazon, Barnes & Noble. I use Abe Books once in a while for specialized books, and I've seen it on Karen's Books and others. Yeah, I think you can get it just about any place.
And do you have a website?
Yes, I do. And it is, what is it? It's Anger Addiction, all one word, smeared together, .org. AngerAddiction.net, I'm sorry. AngerAddiction.net.
AngerAddiction.net. And they can do a search under your name, spelled V-E-R-R-Y-L, middle initial V, last name Fosnight to locate this book if they can't find it from their local bookseller. The local bookseller can also order this in if they request it. And Varel, thank you so much for joining me today and sharing your story.
You're welcome. Unless they go to one of the bookstores, the recovery bookstores, that I've given it away.
Well, congratulations.
For them to sell. Okay, thank you very much. I've enjoyed it.
Good for visiting with you. Thank you again for joining me today. For Indie Book Publishing Archway Press, this is J. Douglas Barker.
You're listening to Indie Book Publishing, and we'll be right back after these messages.
It's the Fitness Minute with fitness expert Annette Hammond.
When your focus is to lose weight or maintain your present weight, exercising effectively to burn the most calories is crucial. You want to give yourself every advantage to burn as many calories as possible. One good tip is to do your strength training exercises standing up so you can keep your heart rate up. Another tip is to perform multi-joint exercises when you can. For example, as you're doing a forward lunge, add bicep curls while you're coming up from the lunge. Another example is to execute a wide squat, and as you're coming up from the squat, perform a shoulder press. By doing these multi-joint exercises, you're putting more demands on your body, keeping your heart rate up, and working more muscles at the same time. The goal is to burn the most calories during that workout. I'm Annette Hammond. To hear other fitness and weight loss tips, visit our website at AnnetteHammond.com.
Welcome back to Indie Book Publishing, helping authors publish, promote, and sell their books around the world. Now, back to your host, Steve Jorgensen.
Greetings for Archway Press. This is J. Douglas Barker. Today, I'm honored to visit with author Linda Maria Frank, who joins me from the state of New York in the United States of America to talk about the latest in the series of Annie Tillery mysteries titled The Mystery of the Lost Avenger. Welcome, Linda, to the program.
Well, thank you for having me, Jay. It's a pleasure to be on your show.
Great to talk with you. This book, titled The Mystery of the Lost Avenger, is a continuation of a series of books that you have written. Would you describe your style and content as the same audience? What age would that be?
Actually, The Mystery of the Lost Avenger is number 4 in the Annie Tillery mystery series. So I like to call my books Nancy Drew meets CSI, because when I was a kid, I loved Nancy Drew. Actually, Nancy made me a lifetime reader. And then I taught forensic science, and I decided to marry the two and come up with some stories. I spent my life in the classroom with young minds who liked good stories, and that's actually how I got started writing. I used to write silly stories for them. And then that evolved into, let me see if I can write a book.
Oh, phenomenal. You as an instructor, as an educator, you have brought all of those tools into the writing field as well. You have, in writing your books, the creative process, have you always, even from a young age, been a creative?
I've been creative, but I can't say that I really love to write. I got really into writing as a part of my teaching career, because when you teach, you end up doing a lot of writing, and my creativity was to write curriculum that was interesting. I taught science, and I just thought there's such a wealth of fun things you can do in science, so I ended up writing curriculum, and along with the curriculum, I wrote stories. I made up stories for the kids. Some were true, some were silly. My favorite story is that Isaac Newton invented the Fig Newton. to make money so he could support a scientific career. So that was one of my silly stories.
I love that.
Yeah, it's a cute one.
Of course, I'm
Forget
a silly
gravity.
Guy. I'm a silly person, so I would obviously gravitate toward that. I'm not the master of puns, but I use them quite frequently. The Mystery of the Lost Avenger. Now, you also have dabbled into the historical accuracy in this novel. There are some key points that actually are based on history.
Yes. Well, this is what I try to do. I can't get the educator out of me. So all of my books have mystery, history, and science. And in The Mystery of the Lost Avenger, it's a story that takes place in two times. And my heroine, Annie Tillery, actually gets in touch with her ancestry. Her great-grandmother happened to be a WASP, which is Women's Air Service Pilots. In World War II, she worked for Grumman and tested planes. That's true. I mean, not the character of her grandmother, but actually
right.
WASPs did test planes for Grumman. Grumman Aviation was one of the major producers of planes during World War II, and the plant is right here on Long Island, so it was easy to do the research. I just went to the Cradle of Aviation Museum. In fact, my inspiration came from that. I was at the Cradle of Aviation Museum, because Long Island is the Cradle of Aviation, with my family, and they were off doing whatever they were doing, and I was wandering around, and I came across this plane. The Avenger is an airplane, and it was instrumental in winning the war in the Pacific. So in front of this plane is a plaque dedicated to the women who built it, tested it, and flew it to California, to the air bases.
Mm.
And this is one of those days that you could actually climb into the airplane. So, of course, Linda climbed into the airplane. I sat in the seat. And you know what? It's so funny because the dashboard on your 2015-16 SUV is more complicated than the instrument panel on this plane.
Fascinating.
And I sat there, and this feeling came over me. I never really had that happen to me, and I said, I have to write a story about these women. So that was the inspiration, and it went from there. And also in the book, it talks about actual German spies that made their way to Long Island. That's true as well. Submarines actually dropped spies off. Some of them were apprehended. We actually got a lot of information from one of the spies who actually willingly decided that he needed to tell what was going on. It was probably in the middle of the war, and maybe things weren't looking so good for the Germans. I don't know. But those things are true. The rest of it is, the rest of the plot is fiction.
How did you get introduced to Annie Tillery? Where did she come from?
Annie Tillery is the teenager I would have loved to have been. She's basically a girl who's a compilation of my favorite students. I won an award for inspiring girls to go into science. So I had a lot of girl students who impressed me. And so I decided that I would create a role model for girls. And I wanted her to be attractive, not beautiful, smart, but not nerdy. You know, I wanted her to be the kind of girl that today's teenagers could relate to, or today's girls could relate to. She's adventurous. She's a risk taker. Then she just loves to get into some kind of a puzzle that she can solve. So her name comes from, I just think Annie is cute. And then I was stuck in a traffic jam on the Brooklyn-Queens Expressway, and the exit was Tillery Street.
Mm-hmm.
So,
wow.
And I spelled it wrong.
Well,
so,
you did well.
So that's where she comes from.
Is the story and the characters totally immersed in the era of World War II?
It goes back and forth. It's set in 1943 in the Grumman plant, and it's set in the present in the ancestral home of Annie in New Windsor, Maryland, and also on Long Island in Republic Field. So it goes from the present back to 1943. It goes back and forth.
Do all of your novels with Annie Tillery do the same?
What do you mean, be the same setting?
Not the same setting, but do they also have that same time frame?
No. This is the only one that goes back and forth in time. So
excellent.
the other novels all stay in the present.
Have you had any response to this novel yet? I mean, what has been the response?
The people who've read it as either beta readers or people who've just bought the book and read it, because the book's only been out for a month. So they love it. They absolutely love it because it's very, it's kind of emotional because Annie is getting in touch with her past. She never knew about this person, and it's making her so proud that she had an ancestor who did what her great-grandmother did. And at the end, she meets with four of her great-grandmother's surviving friends who actually worked with her. And the end of the book is pretty emotional. It's a sweet book.
Most of my authors have a technique for laying out a story. Did you sit down and actually do an outline, or was this something that just grew organically, carried along by the characters?
No, I can't write that. What I have to do is I have to write an outline because it's a mystery. Everything has to dovetail at the end. You can't just go off on little bird walks and have them not show up at the end of the book. So I do an outline. I get an idea for a story. I do an outline, then I do a chapter outline, and then I actually do a flow chart with clues. If I introduce a clue, it has to end up somewhere making sense, and so I do a flow chart of how it's going to move through the chapters, and then I also do a character outline. So I'm very organized as far as the way I write, and my writing style is what I try to do is at the end of every chapter, I try to say something, do something, introduce something that makes you want to go on to the next chapter. I also try to introduce an emotional angle. In other words, it's not just a mystery story. It's not just a history story. There's an emotional angle where Annie is getting involved with either her boyfriend, Ty, her mother, her grandmother, her father. She lives with her aunt, who is a New York City police detective. So something is always going on in her life as well as the mystery.
Is there some action in here also that may attract even some male readers?
Action? Oh, yes. Well, I think the male readers will be very interested. I've actually had teachers buy a classroom set of my books, and, of course, the class is mixed boys and girls, and then they send me questions and comments, and the boys like the books just as much as the girls. But what's in this book for boys is just a lot about airplanes. Ty's boyfriend, I'm sorry, Annie's boyfriend, Ty, Tyler Egan, gets his pilot's license. So they spend some time in the air, and they also spend some time talking about the features of the plane. And then, of course, there's a lot about the features of the Avenger and the history of the Avenger. Boys are usually interested in airplanes and their history and how they impacted the American scene, so to speak.
Absolutely. In a couple of sentences, explain to my listeners why they should also get a copy of this book along with your others in the series.
Well, the books are, if you liked CSI, if you like forensic science, you like solving a scientific puzzle and understanding the science behind it, all of my books include that. You also have characters who are fun. There's some humor in the book. For instance, the book before this is called Secrets in the Fairy Chimneys. And there's nothing about fairies in this. Fairy chimneys are a geological formation in Turkey. But there are two characters in the book, a boy and a girl. They're 12-year-old twins. And they try to convince Annie to use a Ouija board to channel Nancy Drew to solve the mystery. So there's a lot of humor and silliness in the book, which, you know, keeps you chuckling. So they're fun. These books are just fun. If you're an adult, and I have a lot of adult readers, actually, they will transport you back to when you were 11 or 12 years old and you were reading Nancy Drew and the Hardy Boys and all those fun things. So I try to make them fun, but I also try to educate at the same time in a way that's interesting.
Linda, the title is The Mystery of the Lost Avenger. Who is the Lost Avenger and how did that title come about?
Okay, the Avenger is a Grumman plane that was actually used in World War II, and it was significant in winning the war in the Pacific. And what happens in the book is the wreckage of an Avenger is found in the Appalachian Mountains. Grumman knew it was missing. They didn't know what happened to it, but it was found by some prospectors for mining in the mountains of Appalachia. And then, of course, once it was discovered, the NCIS, because it's a Navy plane, investigated and found a note in it from Annie Tillery's grandmother, great-grandmother, and that's how she found out about the plane crash, and the story goes from there.
Beautiful story. The title, again, is The Mystery of the Lost Avenger, an Annie Tillery mystery. My author, Linda Maria Frank. Linda, where can my listeners get copies of your book?
You can get copies on the Archway website, and you also can get them in Amazon. And if you go on my website, which is lindamariafrank.com, that's the easiest way to get to get a copy of the book.
Have you been inspired to continue with an additional mystery in the near future?
Well, what's happened with this is that Annie and her boyfriend are going off to college, and they're just about, you know, they're young adults now. And I'm thinking that I may decide the next book is going to be an adult mystery.
Interesting.
Same characters, because they keep growing up. I can't keep them. I can't trap them at the age of 18 or 19.
It's hard to do that, absolutely. I've got a grandson who just turned 18, so I can relate. The title of this book, again, is The Mystery of the Lost Avenger. Listeners, if you want to get a copy of this and your local bookseller does not have it, they can order it in by request. Again, the author, Linda Maria Frank. Thank you, Linda, for joining me today.
And thank you, Jay.
My pleasure. For Indie Book Publishing Archway Press, this is Jay Douglas Barker.
You've been listening to Indie Book Publishing with your host, Steve Jorgensen. Join us again next week at noon Eastern as Steve interviews another great author.